Hello, I'm Preston Schlankover. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disasters might affect you and your community. The winter cold and flu season is still upon us, and we should be fortifying our immune system to counter these threats. I recommend doTERRA's On Guard products, specifically their beadlets and soft gels. The On Guard ingredients of pure essential oils make this one powerful aid in helping our family maintain our good health. To find out more, visit our website at www.oilsforlifetoday.com. That's oils, number four, lifetoday.com, or find the link at the bottom of the show notes and it'll take you right there. This week's episode is with the author of a book that I read about 2-3 years ago, maybe a little longer possibly, but it's one that I have that I reach to whenever I need it, and one that I recommend highly to everybody I talk to. And this book should be on everybody's reading list and on their bookshelf, because as far as I'm concerned, there's three books that you should have, and this is one of them. The three books, before I get into which one I'm talking about specifically today, the three books I'm talking about is, the first one is Survival Theory, A Preparedness Guide by Jonathan Hollerman. The listeners, regular listeners of our show, know Jonathan because he's been on our show a couple times. I've got four separate episodes with him, and we had some really great conversation about his theory on survival. The other one is The Dark Secrets of SHTF Survival by Selko Begovic, which he lived through the Bosnia crisis, and his book is stark and real, and it gives you a glimpse into what life is like in an environment where there is no rule of law. And the book we're going to talk about today is The Modern Survival Manual, Surviving the Economic Collapse by Fernando Farfal Aguirre. This book is fantastic. And Fernando, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Preston, it's great to be here talking with you.
It's a pleasure having you. I've often thought about reaching out to you to get you on the show, but I've had so many other things that I was doing that I hadn't reached out to you yet, but I'm glad we did finally have an opportunity to get together and get you on the show. Can you just give us a brief bio of what you went through and give us an idea how you came about writing this book, which is actually the first of three books that you've written?
Yes, well, I was living in Argentina, my country, and it's been not as stable as some other places, but it was pretty well off compared to most Latin American countries. It was a pretty stable place, middle class, it still existed, and it did pretty much okay. You had good standards of living in general. It was, most of all, it was a lot safer. That was one of the big things that changed, and that's one of the big things one of the main topics of my books is security, because I've never met anyone that, you know, starved to death or died of thirst, which are, you know, typical things covered in survival and preparedness. I never met anyone that died because of that. I do know a lot of cases where people ended up losing their lives or ruined their lives because of lack of ability to defend themselves and their family. So we were doing fine, but again, going into a lot of debt, the national industry was in a pretty bad shape. The politicians were also mostly corrupt, unfortunately, as they so often are. And it's mostly because of the national debt that was slowly killing us, and a currency that was not realistic, converting to one Argentine peso to a dollar at a 1-to-1 exchange rate that made everything imported so much cheaper than anything made locally. So the national industry was in pretty bad condition. When we couldn't make our payments, the country defaulted and everything went downhill from there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, we're having a lot of financial things going on here. I've seen a lot of things on YouTube and read a few books about the financial problems that are just underlying the surface of this this what appears to be fairly calm water right now. But there's some jagged rocks in our future financially, and I suspect that some of the lessons that you learned in your experience there in Argentina in 2001 would probably mirror what we may see here as well.
Well, you know, there's things that catch my attention. Like, for example, there was a recent bailout just a few months ago. The insurers of the banks in the United States just got bailed out, and no one seemed to notice. I don't know the exact figure, but it was like 800 billions or something ridiculous like that, and it barely made it to the news. People just are, you know, desensitized, and it's also these folks control lots of the mainstream media, and they know what they want people to read or not. It is amazing that information like this rarely gets across, and those are really not good signs. When the banks keep on getting bailed out time after time, that's just not a good sign.
Well, you know, bailouts are bad. But a bail-in is even worse, and that's where they take your money that you have in those banks, and they keep it for their purposes to keep them solvent, and they essentially bankrupt us.
Right. It's a system that it's very hard to sustain itself, and I don't know how it's going to be lasting a few years from now. But it's something that, as we were talking about before, it's quite global. It's not just the United States. It's pretty much across the globe in most of the developed nations that they have financial systems that are impossible to sustain themselves. And you always see this the socialist communist threat looming its head, usually in most of these countries where these things start getting worse.
Yeah, because when the socialists, which are communists in my book, when they take power, they start wasting money and raising taxes and making life more difficult. And the fall is not very far away, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with you.
Yeah, Venezuela is a perfect example. It only took them like 3 or 4 years to get to a point where they were insolvent. They were selling whatever they could to stay up and have some kind of economy, and then it just crashed completely.
Well, and it is something that I've talked about before many times, how people were still caught by surprise for something that was so visible, so obvious. The denial that people have is very strong. They just see this getting worse and worse, and they think, no, it's going to be getting better soon, or no, it's not going to be getting as bad, and it is.
Yeah.
I just pulled out the figures, just to be more accurate, because I don't want to, this is from fortune.com, this is not some fringe thing.
Right.
It says that the Fed's $400 billion plan to bail out the repo market. The repo market would be like the backup of these banks.
Jeez. Yeah.
$400 billion is a lot of money.
It sure is. It's a lot of taxpayer money that is wasted in my book. These banks, they're finding whatever way they can to get into our pockets. They're all owned by globalists, so that's part of the problem also. In your book on page 21, the heading here is how to use this book, and you give a lot of great examples of things, or a lot of really good information here that people who are serious about preparedness should understand, especially if they haven't taken a look at a financial collapse. It says here, just on how to use this book. So I'm going to read a portion here. Other than that, if there's a road to or a road or trail leading to it, it's part of civilization, and you can't escape the need to bring mankind and civilization into the equation. My rule of thumb is if you got there, so can others. And if you got there by car, you're as good as a sitting duck. And then the next paragraph says, in order to use this book properly, you need to understand a few things. We are experiencing what we experience here in Argentina, even though some choose to deny it, was a socioeconomic collapse of a pretty much average Western society that was apparently doing well, economically speaking. That is, until the rot behind the facade revealed itself. The rot I'm referring to was debt and competition helped by international groups with their own agendas. So you were just talking about that type of situation where those rocks underneath the surface were part of the reason why you guys had your problems in Argentina and why we have a potential for serious problems here.
Well, yes, the news I was just mentioning, bringing up is not good. I mean, when the money that people make ends up, bailing out or ends up, whatever word you prefer to put it, but ends up in the pockets of giant international corporations that basically run things, people end up suffering. And they can abuse that, and they do abuse that to as far as they can. And in the case of Argentina, they abuse it to the point of, okay, we're going to be keeping your savings. You know, we're going to be closing. If you had $100,000 in the bank, that was your life saving. We're going to be taking that and giving you these pesos that are worth nothing, or 30% of what they were. And these corporations are the same ones that operate in the rest of the world. It wasn't some specific Latin American bank that did this. It was the same names you see in any major city in the planet. So it's not as if they're, it's not a question about are they willing to do it. They have the will to do it. The thing is, can they do it? And they do it whatever, whenever and wherever they can.
Yeah. And so these banks were major name brand banks that we here in America would recognize.
Absolutely.
They're not some fly by night socialist experiment somewhere. They're major international banks that probably have headquarters in New York.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's
And what you were talking about in terms of roads, and that's another big one. You often see people, oh yeah, I'm going to be getting myself one gas tank away. It is easy to think you're well prepared when you haven't had a need to test how well prepared you really are. It is easy to assume.
That's good.
You know how the elephant repelling stone. You know, yes, I can have an elephant repelling stone. And I think it works until I go to Africa and get stomped by an elephant or eaten by a lion.
Right.
When you never have the need to actually, the thing that happens is this, and it's not just Argentina. Over the years, I've researched a lot, learned a lot, pretty much anywhere where things went south. If you think you are far enough, you never get safety by distance. You get safety from certain type of things like small petty crime, you know, someone snatching a purse or someone seeing an opportunity and breaking a window and getting into your house. But when things get really bad and you have an isolated residence, you know, someone from Ukraine sent me an email. He had a very nice place with a very nice big antenna in the middle of, you know, like a farm up in a hill, just a very good location strategically speaking. That was until the Russians invaded. They knocked on his door and said, we need this. And that was basically it. You know,
oh, no.
What are you going to be doing? Fighting the Russians as they invade?
No.
I got emails from people that told me also, you know, Russians are invading, we're leaving, we're moving to Kiev. And a few months later, yes, we got a new job, we're living here and just going on with our lives. But you need to have this way of improvising. And even in places like South America in general, any residence that's more isolated, yes, it may be safer in certain things, but word gets around, someone's going to be knowing about you, and if you have stuff worth stealing, they're likely to come after you eventually.
Yeah, especially if you have produce or livestock and people are hungry. Well, they're going to be coming, and in the middle of the night, they're going to be taking your livestock or slaughtering it right there in the field.
Yeah, well, that's something that happens, at least in Argentina, it's very common. About, you know, something happens pretty much every given week. Something gets stolen by people nearby, you know. Maybe it's hard to call them neighbors because they're not living right next to you, but people in the area. Word gets around, you have this, you have that, and not everyone is of the same mindset, and they have no problem if they feel they need something very much. They're likely to come after it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a lot of things in your, a lot of warnings in your book, as well as helpful hints. Some of the things that you talked about in there was using gold jewelry instead of gold bullion, let's say, or coins, because jewelry, even a gold chain, you can cut off a certain amount of links for a certain weight to that would be a certain value. So it's easier to divide that value than to cut a coin in half or even a small proportion of it.
Well, it's very interesting because that is something that, as I explained before, as years go by, you keep doing research. I was in a museum just a while back, a museum here in Spain, and they had they found a pot, you know, a ceramic pot full of hacked silver. Hacked silver is basically that. It's that they just cut the coin. If you're not paying with a full coin, you pay with half of it, you know. And that's what basically hacked silver is. And it's been used for thousands of years. Now, this thing about opening up a few links from a gold chain, my wife's family, some of their relatives that still lived in Italy during the war and they needed money to pay for things, they had a big chain that they would take small links from. And by the time they left Italy, it became a small bracelet. So it went from a necklace. And it was, once they left, they added, you know, they took it to a jewelry store so as to add those, you know, so as to close it. And, you know, it's one of those family heirlooms that has a pretty rich history.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know, it teaches a lesson with that history. You know, I live in Virginia, and, you know, this is the birthplace of the American Revolution and also the Civil War. But in Fredericksburg, Virginia, there's an old pub, and it's all historic, and there, you know, it's not a pub anymore, but it's a museum, and they tell stories about the people coming in there with a silver coin, and they would take these big shears and shear off a piece of that coin to pay for their night's lodging and their meal.
Right. Yeah, that's about accurate. And we all have to take these lessons and adapt it. Because, for example, today, if you're buying bullion, maybe for someone in the United States buying silver eagles or pre-65 coins makes sense, even buying gold as well. I think that the main lesson is gold and silver, precious metals, hold their value through thousands of years. We're used to very short periods of time, but something that holds its value through thousands of years, that's something that you can put to use, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a wise investment, for sure. When I talk to people about a collapse, I throw some things out there that are shocking. One of the things that I use when I shock people in conversation about a grid down or a situation that is similar to what Argentina went through in 2001, I use a quote from your book where you talk about gangs going out into the rural areas, like to farmhouses and things like that, and they rape, pillage, and burn, and they do it at will because nobody can hear the victims scream.
Yes, that's something that it's something that a lot of people think they're ready for. They think they are. I'm just very well prepared. I have lots of guns. Well, one of the things that happened before I left Argentina was a good friend of mine. He was pretty well off, lots of land, a couple of farms actually in the country, pretty big ones. He was certain that nothing could happen to him because he had people in his place. You know, it was a working farm with a lot of folks working there, some of them living permanently there. And one day, just before I left, he gave me a call and he said, you know, exactly what you said happened to us. They just moved in. They went from building to building, taking hostages from one house to the other, and we couldn't do anything. We couldn't do nothing about it. They just took whatever they wanted. Mm. So we like to think that we're going to be handling situations a certain way. That happening in reality, we're never, unless you actually have permanent security 24 hours a day, these people will just, you know, they have their time. They're going to be checking out the place for a few days, see the movement. And it is so easy to go after someone that is in an isolated location where you have the advantage of privacy and time on your side.
Yeah. We live here in America. We live in an environment that we can't really think past what we would do. You know, I wouldn't do that, so nobody else would do that. I don't need a gun, so you don't need a gun. You know, I have locks on my doors, but that's fine. That's good enough. Nobody's going to break in my neighborhood. Things like that. They don't really understand the true seriousness with which many communities in this country and around the world live in, where there's actual predators who prey on those unsuspecting people.
Yes, it's this the idea that it's pretty safe. Nothing's going to be happening here. Okay, that is just fine. You know, great. But if the situation does change and it does get worse, then don't think that you're prepared because nothing has happened yet. If you do experience a big social change, an economic meltdown, or even civil problems, most of the problems recently in South America, and I'm talking about Argentina, Chile, and Bolivia, they were mostly political ones. So the political aspect alone can have a big, big consequence, especially as we were talking about before. Today in America, it is one of the most likely eventual problems is this social unrest because of political and social reasons.
Yes, yes, you're right. Now, we've been talking a lot this half hour about just overview of your book, but you have a lot of good, helpful hints in here about things that you should have in order to help your ability to survive, like having emergency kits and knives, weapons, martial arts capability. You talk about water. You talk about a lot of different things as far as what the average person should have in their bag of tricks as far as survival.
Yes, it is. Well, most of these are familiar concepts for most people into survival and preparedness. The bug out bag, the kit you keep in your house, your vehicle. I like to look at it in terms of layers. The first one being yourself, and by this I mean your mental attitude. If you don't have the right attitude in general, the will to overcome adversity, then nothing else matters. Expanding on that a little bit is your body and your physical ability to either defend yourself, to get work done, to stay healthy as well. That's a big one that people often overlook. We focus a lot on gear and stuff and not on how healthy and well we are. And I'm not talking about anything extraordinary, just, you know, Get yourself checked, stay healthy, get a blood pressure measured every once in a while so as to know you're doing fine. And then, yes, it is about having a certain stuff as well, which most of us already know of, having a supply of food, water, basic preparedness supplies at home, in your car as well, even your what's often called your EDC, you know, that a multi-tool in your pocket and a flashlight during an emergency goes a long way. And a big part of this is the ability to defend yourself. And one of the big advantages in the United States is that you can get yourself a concealed carry license. You can actually carry a weapon with you. I suggest that everyone that can should do that and get training so as to know how to use it properly.
Yes, training is important. With somebody who's worked in law enforcement for 37 years, training is very important. So I recommend that whether it's just handgun or long gun, you need to have proper training, and there's no substitute for time behind the trigger, which means the more you shoot, the more capable you are. It's not just on a flat range, standing in one place, shooting at targets. It's doing scenario type of shooting as well, which gets you better prepared for whatever situation you may run into with, with a deadly adversary.
Yes, and people often overestimate their capabilities. They think that, oh, I'm a great shot. I'm more than ready. Or even people that really are good shooters in practical shooting sports, I'm just fantastic. I'm doing very well. I shoot fast, accurately, which is great, which is very important. And I encourage everyone to practice practical shooting sports because they do help. But it is no replacement for actual defensive shooting training. That is something completely different, and you need proper classes for that. You need a good instructor so as to teach you how to do that correctly, because if not, there's a number of things that could go wrong even if you are a good shooter. A lot of people just assume that because they have fun or they somewhat handle a gun okay, they're ready for this sort of thing, and they're simply not.
Yes, you're right. Now, our time is going so fast. It seems like we just got started. Can you give us a little insight into your other two books and tell us about your website or blog site or whatever else you have?
Sure. My first book is the one you just mentioned about the 2001 crisis in Argentina, how to prepare for that sort of thing. My second book was about bugging out and relocating. That's the title of it, and was a lot of the research I did when I ended up leaving Argentina myself, some of the strategies and, you know, things to look for when you're thinking. And I focused it also for Americans who has to know how to analyze different states, you know, as a potential place to relocate to if you're not happy where you are right now. And of course, the part about bugging out in case you have to leave during an emergency. And my latest book is called Street Survival Skills, which for anyone that liked my first book, Street Survival Skills is pure practical stuff. It is pure practical skills and abilities, a lot of which I described in my first book, but I couldn't explain well. This is full of sketches and drawings explaining everything in detail, and that is probably the book I recommend to most people. It is the one that's going to be giving you a nice edge if you're getting started or if you want to know the kind of stuff I described in my first book as well. And there's also my YouTube channel, The Modern Survivalist, for people to check out.
All right. And you have a website?
Also, themodernsurvivalist.com.
All right. Good deal. We want to do a quick shout out to Matt Bracken as well for his assistance in this first book, Modern Survival Manual, Surviving the Economic Collapse. Matt helped you get that thing ready for publication.
Yes, he's a fantastic guy, and I'm a very good friend.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I watch his stuff on YouTube all the time, and we've corresponded a few times as well. But civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with a guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Also, you can check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio. This is where I post most of the time. And on Twitter at civil_def_radio. That's civil_def_radio, where I post every once in a while. These are all about the threats I see to our safety and security as a nation. So I wish to thank Fernando again for being our guest on the show today, and to our friends and listeners out there who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.